you're a banana, don't try to be an orange. You won't be a good orange. You be a banana, you're going to attract people who love bananas, right? Until you define what is satisfaction, what will satisfy you, you will never be satisfied. The lesson out of that is go where you're valued most. Go to environments, go to people where you're going to be valued most.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to The Science of Self, where you improve your life from the inside out. We have a guest with us today, Carrie Prigent. I'm not going to introduce our guest today other than give a name and ask him to introduce himself and tell us what we should know about him.
Okay, that'd be me. I'm trying to keep it relatively short. Background is in accounting, CPA. Started consulting in 87 after working for several companies. And the big thing that got me going was I noticed that business owners did not know how to use their financial data. They didn't know how to read financial statements. They were all very good at finding possibilities and turning into revenue. They were very bad at managing a business, scaling a business, building an organization, having processes to run the business. They all became, I guess, they worked for the business didn't work for them. They couldn't take time off, et cetera. Part of my mission was to educate business owners on how to, quote, manage by the numbers that they all talked about, but really didn't know how to do it. The newer thing is everybody wants to take their business to the next level. And again, so tell me what's the next level. And it's more revenue. Okay. But so what the way I work with people, where I work with business owners is we start with by helping them, and I know this sounds like a bold claim, but we double net profits in a year. Secondly, we help you structure your business so that now the business works for you rather than you for it. The business is run by processes. We also get you actionable financial data on a weekly basis so that you can manage by the numbers. And longer term, we help you design your business into the future so that can be what's most beneficial for you rather than the forces of the market and government and competitors and everything else pushing your business somewhere you probably don't want it to be. So,
all right, Carrie, so you're a business coach and you double profits, you deal with revenue and numbers and all those very invaluable things for a business owner. But this is not a business podcast, and our listeners are not looking for business advice, of course. They're looking for personal growth advice. So when my listener says, before they tune out, what does this mean for me? What does this interview have for me? Can you draw some lines, draw some connections there for us?
Most people walk through life, sleepwalking, actually, with this narrative of, if only my life were more better different, I'd be happy. But they never take the time to define or identify what is more, better, or different. I wish I made more money. And also, they refer to happiness like this thing that's out there that hopefully will find them someday. And happy is a very shallow, temporary emotion that's about, I'm happy because I assess this positive stuff is happening to me right now. What I point to is something that's more lasting. My question is, what is going to satisfy you? And by satisfaction, let me put it this way, satisfaction is defined by what is enough action. So if you're saying you want more, better, different, what? You want more money? How much more? And if you just want more income, here's 10 bucks. You happy? You satisfied? No. Okay, so define the number. And here's something I learned a long time ago from one of my mentors. Until you define what is satisfaction, what will satisfy you, you will never be satisfied. You will always have that, finally, my life more, better, different. And most people spend about maybe 5 minutes thinking about what I want out of my life. Then just, I get a job, I go to work, I come home, drink a six pack, watch some tube, go to sleep and do it all over again and pray for the weekends so I can do even less. There's no satisfaction in that. I would be depressed. I would be resigned and resentful. And that's what most of these people are, resigned and resentful. And they're just going through the motions, just trying to get to the weekends. Because again, there's nothing I can do about it. That's the cement of everything. So when you begin to live in different conversations, you get to live in different moods. Again, the ambition, gratitude, joy, peace. And you have all these, now your world is wide open. You're a much happier person. If you're living in gratitude, joy, and peace, you're going to be happy most of the time. And if you live in ambition where there's all these possibilities, ambition is about what's possible, and oh, that's possible, that's possible. Now you can begin to take action towards what, define what is your satisfaction first. Then you can begin taking action to attain all that. Is any of this making sense?
Absolutely, yes. There's so much in here I'm making notes to get back to, but yeah, it's making perfect sense.
So for your listeners, if you're feeling stuck, if you're unhappy with life, if you're in a relationship that doesn't work, begin to define what actions, and again, in relationships, you can't, one of your things of satisfaction is the other person can't make you happy. The other person can't make you sad. They can invite you to suffer, but they can't. Happy and sadness and anger, that's all self-generated. And it's all because something gets triggered and your discourse, your interpretations of the world, your perspective tells you be happy, be mad, be sad, be something. Your narrative is dictating how you react. Your narrative has been gathering evidence all your life to prove that it's right. And when you go to interrupt that and change it, like, what? You try something different and it doesn't work. See, I told you it's going to fail. You are unlovable. You are stupid. You are whatever. So really, let me put it this way. Why do the world's best athletes have coaches? Because you can't see yourself in the performance of what you're doing. You can't see yourself. Michael Jordan, as great as he was, could not see himself on the court. Now, he could see films after, but it takes a coach that can tell you just little distinctions about make this distinction, try this, try that. And next thing you know, your game is upped, not just a little bit, but a lot. It's those, the finer the distinction, generally the more powerful they are. Also, the coach should have been around longer than you and knows different strategies and how to use them in playing the game. Now, again, the coach doesn't play the game, right? The coach is there to help you up your game level and come together as a team. And again, I was reading something, it was yesterday, and they're talking about these really championship sport teams. You can buy all the best talent around. It's still going to take that team probably 3 to 4 years, 5 years maybe, to really gel together as a team, especially if you bring in a whole bunch of superstars. You got a whole bunch of egos that have to learn to work together. So again, this work is very rewarding, but it takes time. It takes a coach, and it takes really becoming a lot more self-aware about who you are and the narrative that you live by that drives you to experience life the way you do. So if you want a much more rewarding world, rewarding experience of life, it's available. You just have to live with that interpretation that, yes, it's all these possibilities. Yes, I'm grateful for everything I have. I'm at peace with, okay, I'm 70 years old, I'm a male, I'm married, I'm a grandfather. All the facts of my life, I accept all of that. That's who I am. There's some peace that comes with that. And the joy of, yes, I'm here, I've been, everything in my life has got me to right here. This is still what's possible. And there's a lot of joy about that, right? There was a man who gave his son an antique automobile when he turned 18. And he told his son, he said, look, take it different places around town. Find out what they'll give you for it. Don't sell it. Find out what they'll give it for you. So he goes to a new dealer, a used car lot, and they offered him $500. So he goes to a new car dealership, and they offered him $1,000 as a trade-in, right, incentive to buy. He went to an antique car dealer, and they offered him $5,000. He goes to a car club that specialized in that make, model, and car. Somebody offered him $30,000. So the lesson out of that is, how do you want to say it? Go where you're valued most. Go to environments, go to people where you're going to be and you're going to be valued most. Nothing changed about the car. It's just the perceived value in those who saw it. So that's supposed to lead me somewhere about having different conversations. You have to be clear about money. That was the thing. So what is money? Most people think money is the green paper we find in our wallets or the digits in our bank accounts. Those are artifacts. What is money for human beings? Money is a promise. So people who acquire wealth acquire a whole bunch of promises that they can offer they'll buy what they want.
Okay.
If you look at a tree line in the distance, what tree you're going to notice? Pretty much the tree that's taller than the rest.
The different one, yeah.
Yeah, the different one, right? Everything else just looks the same. So you don't want to be in a marketplace where you look like everybody else. You need to find out what is your special sauce, as they say, that people are going to want to be a path to your door. And you're not going to figure it out in a weekend. In other words, what is special about you as a human being? What is your offer to the world? And also be clear, you're not going to attract everybody. As I've said in classes I've taught about using the ontology of languages, half the world thinks you're an asshole. I don't care who you are. Because of your age, because of your sex, because of the way you come from, because of the religion you practice, the way you look, something. Half the world's going to think, ugh. But the other half of the world, what is it about you that is, if you can be your authentic self, right? And I know that gets tossed around. What is an authentic self? If you can be who you really are, you're going to attract certain people. They're going to be attracted to who you are. They're going to be attracted to your discourse, attracted to your conversation. They're going to be attracted to you being you. Now, this goes back into the 70s, but I read a book by Leo Lascaglia. I don't know if anybody knows him. But his thing was, if you're a banana, don't try to be an orange. You won't be a good orange, so people who like oranges won't like you, and people who like bananas because you're trying to be an orange aren't going to like you. Be a banana, you're going to attract people who love bananas, right? Again, in terms of your personal offer to the world is be your authentic self. But you need to be real clear, who is that? Again, it comes down to who are you in the world? What is your offer? Not just what can you get from people? Not, you're not trying to sell anybody anything, but what are your interests? What do you do? Why would somebody want to spend time with you? And you're not going to answer that in a weekend. It's going to take some time.
A person can't be themselves until they get rid of those false perceptions and the false lens that they put on the world, as you mentioned, that were presented to us in our early life as children, that color everything that we do. But you made an interesting point that narrative continues to change as I go through life. My personality, a person's personality, I believe, is set for the most part early.
Your general
but there can be changes.
Yeah, I agree. General temperament is probably at birth, but everything that happens to it afterwards comes from the where you grew up, the people surrounding you where you grew up, your parents' socioeconomic background, what you're exposed to, all that stuff. It all accumulates, and you begin developing some assessments about the world early on, and then you spend the rest of your life gathering evidence that those assessments are correct. The problem is we forget they're just assessments. It's just a story we told ourselves. We hold them like they're the truth, not just the truth, but the truth in capital letters. And those are generally the places, especially the ones we hold very dear to our hearts. Those are the places where people usually suffer. Those are the ones that become dysfunctional or disempowering for people. So it's being able, and the reason it's work is so hard sometimes is because they're so sacrosanct. Oh my God, no, I can't examine this one. This one's too precious. It's too much me.
Right.
They can all be examined.
That's great. What is this person's special offer? I was taught through high school, every person knows something I don't know. Therefore, every person can be my teacher. And I need
Absolutely.
To seek out that thing within them that they know and learn something from them. Ties in, what is this person's special offer? I like that, the phrasing of that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. There's something to learn from everybody. And we as Americans always want like the drive-through answer. Just tell me the answer. I don't have time to do all this work and like study and actually learn it. Tell me the answer. And it's in that kind of a mood that's an arrogant, I already know everything, just give me the answer, that we cheat ourselves out of all kinds of learning and life experiences and really discovering other people.
If you were going to list a couple of seven habits of yourself or other highly successful people, what might those be that a younger individual should look to incorporate into their lives on a daily, regular basis? And then what final piece of advice would you give to our listeners to maybe sum up or maybe expand the conversations that we've had?
Yeah. I don't know if I have seven.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
Two or three, whatever you have.
Yeah. One of the things I really try to get people focused on is what is going to satisfy you. What is enough action? What domain of action? And 37 years ago, one of my major mentor outside of my father said, "You want to know those things in life?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Being ultimately satisfied, getting exactly what you want." I said, "Man, that's great." He goes, "You know how to get it? You ask for what you want." He goes, "Yeah, but before that," he says, "know what you want. If you don't know what you want, and anything will do, you'll probably never be satisfied. In fact, if you don't declare, again, if you don't declare satisfaction, you will never be satisfied. So take some time. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be quick. Always be asking yourself, what would satisfy me? What would be enough action here that I would get it?" And again, so every part of your life requires that kind of reflection, whether it's your hobbies, your body, your relationship, your money, your job, your career, all of that. So that's one place. It's always focusing on satisfaction. It leads to a much more rewarding life. The other thing would be to practice what I call acceptance. And I'm talking about acceptance of what are the facts of your life? You know, I went through a short list of mine. What are the facts of your life? Have you, whatever they are, especially the ones you're not comfortable with, the ones you don't like. I know one guy who was like, "I'm too short." Too short for what? Too short for life? I want to play basketball. It's always been too short. And you point, there's this one pro guy named, what's it called, Spud? The guy could actually
Spud
dunk.
Webb.
Yeah, I think the guy could actually dunk. I said, Maybe you let that limiting conversation, "I'm too short," stop you from playing basketball more and actually learn some skills. They have people who are short for the NBA who've made it. So at the same time, don't beat yourself up that, "Oh, I live by this." Now, just be okay with, "I'm short. I am 5'5" or whatever he was, and I'm equipped for living. Well, practicing what's so about yourself, as well as what's possible. It's practicing that acceptance, and what's possible is what's going to generate the ambition, the excitement, the wanting to get up in the morning, the wanting to take more action. But if you want the peace and the joy and the gratitude, practicing that is acceptance of what's so about you. Like, how's that thing go? Gratitude is not wanting the things you have. Wanting to have different things. I forget how it goes, but instead of just wanting what you don't have, be grateful for what you do have, basically. Because it can all get taken away, all of it. So yeah, practicing acceptance, practicing that will allow you to practice gratitude, peace, joy, and ambition. The other thing is, and I say this all the time, what we get paid for, what we get rewarded for in life is the results we produce. What most people live by is the reasons why not. So which one are you gonna work on? Producing results that you say you're gonna do, you're gonna have all these reasons why you couldn't do it. Because nobody wants to pay for reasons why not. But said a different way, are you committed to your commitments or are you committed to your reasons?
All right. Great. All right, listeners, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. Thanks to our guest, Kerry Prigent. Thanks for being with us. Listeners, be sure to check out those resources online, and we'll see you next week.